very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, Tim Cavalcami here, 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host Matt Barrows. We're kind of making two podcasts into one. Short week, so we can't really do a post-game show and then do another show during the week. This is a combo, Barrows. You ready for the combo platter? We deal with it all on this episode.
I'm ready for it. Yeah, for sure. We're like Shanahan trying to kind of rush through this week, put the bad game behind us. We're just focused on Thursday.
Focus on the next week ahead. It's always about the next game, bros. You know that. You know not to linger in the past. Well, a lot of things to talk about. A lot of things going on there yesterday's game. The loss, the unbelievably weird, collapsing loss to the Cardinals when I just didn't think they could possibly lose this game, and they did. Some injuries. What do you want to deal with, Barrows? Like, what's the first thing on your plate heading into the Thursday's game against the Seahawks?
Well, let's just take a broad view of everything. I mean, you wrote about it. This team is 2-3. There are a lot of 2-3, 3-2 teams in the NFC. They look like a mediocre team right now. You don't see the Kansas City Chiefs losing to the Rams like the 49ers did. You don't see the Kansas City Chiefs losing to the Arizona Cardinals like the 49ers did. They're just, it happened at one point last season during that three-game losing streak. They have a tendency to look ordinary at times. That's what they looked like yesterday. Obviously, they should have put away the Arizona Cardinals. It was a lot like the Rams game where it's just one thing led to another, and they couldn't pull out of the tailspin. And good teams are able to do that. Elite teams are able to do that. And that's not where the 49ers are right now.
No, and there are reasons for this, and some of them are explainable. Some of them are a little tough for 49er fans, I think, and the 49ers themselves to deal with. But two division games, this is like big, going to be a big deal. Not only conference games, because that's what counts in the head-to-head playoff tie-breaking, but potentially, division rivals. If you tie with them, you're in some trouble. This makes this Thursday game against Seattle immense. But first, let's deal with what happened on Sunday. Let's deal with where they are. Christian McCaffrey is one easy explanation, but they don't know when they're getting him back. Do you think there are other major issues? If we just put some of the injuries aside, we know Jake Moody got hurt and that screwed up the game. We know various other injuries they're dealing with, Hufanga, da-da-da-da-da. But McCaffrey's the big one. Are there other issues offensively? Let's go first. Offensively, that you can put your finger on, this is a problem that they need to get fixed right away.
Well, red zone jumps out. One for six yesterday. That's why they lost the game. I mean, they were on their way to winning the game when Jordan Mason fumbled at the 8-yard line. That's the first fumble of his career. I mean, it's going to happen at some point. It happened at a very unfortunate time. Remind me of opening week or opening game in Chicago a couple of years ago where Deebo Samuel fumbled just at the wrong time. I mean, it happens. So there was that. There were it feels like they're not quite sure what to do in the deep red zone. Mm-hmm. They don't run the ball very well in there, which is what they did well last year with Christian McCaffrey. And I think that's something that's really sort of bugging them at this point. I don't know whether it's Mason related or what, but they threw a lot of passes to George Kittle toward the end zone, and he caught one. Could have caught another. That would have been a very tough catch. And then they tried to hit Juwan Jennings because he's such a good, reliable target. And one of the passes to Jennings was definitely off base. Jennings actually caught it, did one of his catch it behind the defender's front, but it was such a outside throw that he was out of bounds when he finally gathered it in. Then there was, you and I talked about this in the press box, there was the one in the flat to George Kittle north side of the field. It was second quarter and looked like it was going to be a touchdown. Kittle had pretended like he was going to block, and then he came in motion to the near pylon and the ball was too high and outside. It just took Kittle off the course that he was on, and he was stopped a couple of yards short. I still haven't seen a good angle for what happened. I think Purdy was rushed on the throw.
Yeah, there was definitely somebody coming at him.
Never yeah, he threw off his back yeah. foot, and that altered the throw, and so that altered the design of the play and kept it from being a touchdown. But it's like, you know, when you're in the deep red zone like that, it's just little minuscule things that throw you off and are the difference between an incompletion and a touchdown.
Yeah, Purdy talked about, you know, you got to pull the trigger, you know, and he talked about that in red zone. But as you just wrote about in your minutia, the last play where he gets hits, interception, Kittle is wide open, like yeah. wide open. And yeah. for some reason, he just doesn't quite think to throw it that quickly, other than he was trying to get it to him a little late. And maybe he's patting the ball a little bit, as Birdie said. Maybe guys aren't coming open, but you are constricted in the red zone. You just got to fire. Remember Sean Hill, when remember he was the starter how many years ago, and he was having trouble in the red zone because he just couldn't get the ball out quick enough. And that's when they went to Alex Smith. I remember that very clearly in Houston. They just needed somebody who could just pull the trigger. And Purdy is good at pulling the trigger. If something is going on, the receivers are not open. The plays quite aren't there, maybe because without somebody, you know, running back, the defenses really have to worry about coming out. They are, you know, closing down the receiver lanes. There's something going on there that's being repeated. And yes, one thing I like, they are not running the ball effectively in the red zone. They are like losing yards. They are, you know, that's the thing. It wasn't Mason was getting stuffed at the line, so he was trying to make a second effort, and that's when the ball came loose. I think teams are overplaying some of that, and the 49ers don't have a great counter for it. Maybe that's, you know, a lot of that's McCaffrey, a lot of that's some other things. And also, it just feels to me, not that, you know, Purdy did not play a great game, two interceptions, whether they were his fault or not. You know, some of it is always the quarterback's fault, always. Tough plays, but they need Brock Purdy to be great. Like, they need that. And he was great against the Patriots. Maybe they didn't necessarily need that in that game. But in these other games, we're talking about this muddled NFC with all these teams, 2-3, 3-2. I was just thinking, like, you know, the Packers, the Lions, you know, these are the Seahawks, the 49ers, they're all in that mix. The Cowboys, the Eagles, they're just in there. If we're just going to put the Commanders and the Vikings maybe on a higher tier, which is kind of amazing, but you have to do it right now. For Brock Purdy to win those games at this point, they're not good enough at the other facets. They're kind of built not to win without the quarterback. They're not built that way now. They're not situated where they can go with a mediocre Brock Purdy game. And that was not a great game for Purdy, right? He was missing throws. He had some great throws, but he did not have – and he was extending plays, but he didn't have big plays. That he had the one to Ayuk, and beyond that, I don't know that there were – and the quarterback wasn't making plays. It happens sometimes. You know, he's not throwing out stinkers. He's just not throwing. Sometimes they're not great games. And I think they are, however much Shanahan wants to resist it, right? He does not like to say, let's go with the quarterback. At this point, I think, like Thursday night, Bears, I think they're going to need an incredible perfect game to win that one. I think their defense is not shutting the other team out, especially at the end. They're not making the stops on fourth and third down. The offense is not efficient, right? Where it's not the Shanahan 49ers offensive efficiency. They need Purdy. They need Purdy to throw guys open. They need Purdy to be the best player on the field. I think, you know, Thursday, and then you got the Chiefs, and then you got the Cowboys. These are three humongous games. They go 0-3 here, Barrows. The season might be close to over.
Yeah, it would be 0-3 in the division. You know, to your point, one of the stats that has really stood out, and it seemed like an outlier in the Rams game, it's that Purdy is holding on to the ball for a long time. And that's – he leads the league in that. It's over 3 seconds, and it's skewed by some of these plays where he's scrambling for his life and he's able to, cut back and forth and buy extra time and then finally fling a pass. But – he's doing that because he's not finding anybody open. It's not the, you know, drop back. Everything in the Shanahan offense is, you know, in rhythm. You drop back X amount of steps, the ball should be out, et cetera, et cetera. And this offense looks great when that happens. And it happened at times against the Cardinals. But from the Rams game onward, Rams, Patriots, Cardinals, there have been times where he's just not seeing that open receiver. And he's going through his progressions like he should, and he's just not getting rid of the ball. You're right. Purdy's explanation is that defenses are doing different things to him this year. It's kind of weird that it's happening this year. Why didn't it happen last year at some point, forcing that adjustment to occur then? But it's happening now. It's something that they're having to work through. I think a positive is that Ayuk finally got going. This was a man-to-man coverage team. You expect Ayuk to have big games against man-to-man coverage. He did. So in those instances, when the 49ers kind of recognized the coverage, knew what was going on, knew that Ayuk would get open, it looked like last year, and everything was smooth. But it didn't throughout the whole game. And then you're right, that last play was baffling because he's got to see that rusher coming. It was a delayed blitz. The pass rusher got there quick, but you know, Kittle's wide open. I mean, that's an automatic throw. I'm not sure where his eyes were on that play, but eyes and getting rid of the ball, that's part of the issue that that they were dealing with yesterday.
Yeah, I was gonna say Ayuk, huge game. He was due. He delivered. I was wondering why they didn't throw to him in the end zone. You know, he is a good end zone target. He has scored touchdowns, and they never looked, that I remember, I don't think they looked to him one time in the end zone. And, like, you know, they got other good receivers. I'm not saying they don't, but he was hot. I kind of like, and feel like they kind of sometimes go away from the hot receiver. They're going to their, I get it, their scheme. They went away from Jennings at the end of the Rams game when the guy's dominating, and they went away from Ayuk. And this one, he's got 147 yards. Sometimes they're like, just Justin Jefferson's getting the ball from the Vikings. He is getting the ball. There are other guys, Jamar Chase, getting the ball. I think the 49ers, when things are limited, when they're not blowing through, which they have not been, go to the hot guy. Like, they got to make the play, make the play. That's sometimes I feel like they get away from that. You know, maybe once McCaffrey's back, whenever that is, things will normalize for them. But it does feel a little bit like, why aren't you throwing it to the guy who's just blowing through the defense? I think defensively there are issues. I think we've been kind of touching on them. What'd you think of Bosa when he's asked about how Connor, you know, was stopped early and then kind of dominated the game late with these, you know, read option plays up the middle and just kind of squirting through the defense for 7, 9, 12 yards of play when they had to get him off the field, could not allow a field goal drive, and they went right down the field. That's after picking, right, recovering a ball inside the 10, and they go all the way downfield, not all the way downfield, but downfield enough to set up that game-winning field goal. And then both said, yeah, you know, they did some things we weren't expecting, and we've got to adjust better. We've got to make better adjustments. You know, everybody who covers football knows that's usually code words, you know, not even code words. This is basically saying the coaching staff wasn't on top of it. Did that hit you, Barros? This sounds sort of familiar, right? This is sort of the things we heard about Steve Wilks right about the middle of the season last year.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't see it when I rewatched the game, though. It's not like Connor was, you know, finding wide open holes. He was finding resistance and just busting right through it. He was the strongest guy on the field at the end of that game. And maybe it, you know, had to do with he only had, what, 7 carries in the first half? I forget what it was. 6 carries it might have been. And he was still fresh. He does not like the 49ers. This is sort of like a revenge game for him. But, you know, Bosa was leading the way. I mean, Bosa had a great game. I don't want anybody to misinterpret what I'm about to say. But he was also one of the guys bouncing off of James Conner's legs. He led the team with 3 missed tackles, and they were all the same thing. Bosa, to his credit, working his way down the line and getting a shot at James Conner, but Conner not going down. And the safeties were guilty of it. Ironically, the linebackers weren't quite as guilty, but you know, they had their own issues. So I just didn't see a kind of a scheme problem. Obviously, it was a massive scheme problem on the 50-yard run by Kyler Murray. I mean, both safeties were up. You know, Talano Hufanga totally bit on the play fake. Jair Brown totally bit on the play fake. Those are your, they're the safeties. You know why they're called safeties? Because They're your eraser, as the 49ers call them. They erase mistakes by everybody else. Those guys weren't even in the play. And Bosa crashed down. Fred Warner crashed down as if it was a handoff to James Conner. Everybody thought that Conner was getting the ball. And that's why Kyler Murray raised his hand 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. There wasn't anybody back there at that point. He knew he was gone. So that was a huge kind of scheme overplay by the 49ers. But I didn't see anything beyond that. And maybe it's just I don't have a good eye for it, but – seems like they all had shots at Conner. They just couldn't get him to the ground.
I did ask Bosa, because this is just happens to them all the time, including the fourth down in the Super Bowl, where Bosa crashes down on the play fake and the quarterback goes around. And like, I've never heard anyone say it was his fault, but I wanted to clear, is your responsibility on that to crash on the dive? And he said, yes. And then someone else has the leverage on the outside. Yes.
Yeah.
Now he's not going to say who it was, but yet clearly this is how they play it. Because Bosa does it every single time. They did not have it covered on the 4th-and-1 in the Super Bowl because Patrick Mahomes keeps it and runs for the first down, you know, a game-breaking play. They stop him there. The 49ers win the Super Bowl. And clearly nobody had the leverage on this one. And looked like, Devontae Campbell probably was the leverage there, but he's not a guy who's very good at that. He's just not fast enough. He gets caught in traffic. We're not scheme guys, but if that's what your defense is built on, this is going to happen to you and has happened to this defense time and again and again. Lamar Jackson years ago, like he just kept it and ran around the side and he went for 20 yards. I would tweak that. That's my suggestion. What do I know? It just seems dangerous to keep allowing quarterbacks to have that wide open on fourth downs or third downs on these huge plays. It is a killer. And let's go to the fourth down on yesterday's game. Fourth and seven.
Yeah.
The Cardinals down. They need to make a play all out blitz. You understand that. Leonard Floyd has a pretty good shot at Kyler Murray, but Murray keeps backing up and has the arm strength to throw it outside. Receiver beats Isaac Yiadom. You know, it's a tough play for you. I mean, he's trying to cover. He has a two-way go. He doesn't have leverage. Guy breaks outside. Was it Michael Thomas? I forget.
Marvin Harrison Jr.
Marvin Harrison. Yeah, there you go. Pretty good receiver. Great play, but once again, a fourth down game comes out. You stop this team on fourth down, you win the game, and 49ers can't do it.
Yeah, no, and the blitz was had a big role in this game. 49ers went into the game with the third lowest blitz rate in the NFL, and they blitzed a third of the time on Sunday, 10th most of any team in Week 5, and they weren't all that effective. I mean, they blitzed like a team that's not used to blitzing. And that's a theme. That was a theme last year. I mean, that's sort of the kind of the big scheme question that we were hearing after that Minnesota game last year. Why are we blitzing so much? We're not a blitz team. That's not what we do. They did on Sunday. They had mixed success, and they just haven't been very good at it. It wasn't as bad as the Rams game where Matthew Stafford just picked them apart on the blitzes. But it's not what they do, and
they're not good blitzers. They don't have good blitzers. Like, I mean, I don't know who would be their best one. Hufanga maybe their best blitzer.
I guess so. Fred Warner should be able to blitz. I don't know if Fred Warner was, you know, what percentage of Fred Warner we were seeing. He led the team. He led the game in tackles with 12. But he didn't. It wasn't the Fred Warner we saw in weeks 1 through 4. Where he's leading the charge and creating plays. And then, you know, after him, there's nobody. There's really nobody. It's a very weak position right now, especially when Fred Warner is injured. And I just think that this team, this is something for fans to hang their hats on. This team is going to look a lot different going to Tampa Bay after the bye. They might have Christian McCaffrey. They might have Ricky Pearsall. They might have Drake Greenlaw. Drake Greenlaw is sort of the Christian McCaffrey to the defense. I mean, he is really a linchpin in making that whole thing work. They might not have Talanoa Hufanga. 49ers had a very early press conference today, which, you know, was a little silly because Kyle Shanahan didn't have any more information than he had yesterday afternoon when he talked to us. So there was no update on Talanoa Hufanga's wrist. I can only imagine there's a fracture there, though. You know, that's what would cause somebody to leave a game, I would think. I don't know. But let's just say it is, and he's out. All of a sudden, they're light at safety, too. They've got three safeties. They're going to need to bring another guy in. So that's an area of concern moving forward.
Dre Greenlaw, man, you can just feel the difference. And when they have Dre Greenlaw out there with Fred, the two of them, that middle of the field is shut down. And when you have no Greenlaw and you have Fred maybe, you know, not 100%, at least in the last game, God knows what he's going to be Thursday, by the way. That's one thing. I was saying I would have not played Warner on Sunday. Now you would have risked losing the game. You did lose the game.
And losing the Cardinals? Are you crazy?
Yeah, oh, that would never happen. You can't do that. To make sure he was healthy for Thursday's game. Now he's played through that, and we don't know if his injury is better or worse. And then you're going to that game on Thursday night. You would really want Fred Warner to be 100%. We shall see. They've got some issues. I think Nick Sorensen's under the gun here. I think, you know, I don't, again, you're right. I don't see anything perfectly schematically that you can say, absolutely, there's a problem here, other than Nick Bosa saying some things. And it doesn't look as sharp. It just doesn't look as sharp as we've seen 49ers with D'Amico Ryans and with Robert Saul. Again, maybe that's just an example we shouldn't keep using. This is every year's new, personnel's new, but it just doesn't look as tied together. They got time. There is time. They win on Thursday. They're tied for the NFC West, tied on top of the NFC West. It's bizarre how this is working. A four-game winning streak. Now, that'll be tough given the teams are playing, but a three-four-game winning streak, five-game winning streak puts them right back in the playoffs, obviously. But this is not how good teams play. This is what I keep going back to. This is not how good teams win games. They get a blocked field goal for a return for a touchdown, which we never see from them. We don't see them making big plays and special teams. They just don't try for them. They don't make them. They give them up. That's what they do. And yet, they get that return. They score the touchdown. Special teams, yay, yay, yay. And then they blow the kickoff return coverage on the next play. Moody's got to make the tackle. It's possibly a touchdown. I'm not in it. I'll just don't have him make tackle. You got to play football. You're playing football out there. If you tell your kicker you can't make a tackle, then the rest of the team is not going to respect any of this. You might as well just, you know, run him off the field as soon as he kicks the ball. Tackle with proper form. I'm sorry, you know, it's a bad break for him to get hurt with the ankle, but you gotta hope the kicker can make a tackle without getting hurt. And he gets hurt, that affects the entire rest of the game. It affects whether they can have to go for it on 4th and 23, which they had to, and they didn't make it. It's on from the 27-yard line. They need to score a touchdown, not, you know, get in range for a field goal at the end, because who knew if Wisnowski, what his range was going to be. I think Shanahan said the 15, so like 32, 33, yeah, something. Yeah, it's an extra point. And I don't know if that's a guaranteed make either, by the way. It just, special teams, weird things happen with them. And even when they get something good out of it, something bad eventually happens right away. I don't know what we keep saying this. I don't know what the fix is. They're going to point to the field goal block for sure, a big deal. But that was pretty low kick. I don't think they induced the low kick. It just was a low kick. They did get it, and they did return it. Guillaume and Lenore. Man, what are they going to do, kicker, Barros? What's your sense on what the kicking prospects are?
I don't know. I mean, they're having a tryout today on Monday, and we'll know by Tuesday who they're bringing in. And that guy will have a few opportunities Tuesday. They usually have their one practice a week before a Thursday game. They usually hold it at Levi's Stadium. So, you know, that guy will get a kick in Levi's Stadium. He's not going to have a lot of warm-up before going up to Seattle and kicking in a national spotlight game for the division lead, no less. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you, here we are a week into October. October is trade month. I actually think the trade deadline's been pushed back a week this year, so it might be early November.
Yeah, November.
This is when teams start to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, 49ers always make a trade. They always do. What position is at the top of the list for yeah. improvement?
It's like, what position isn't at this point?
Other yeah, than well, it's, it yeah. should be a long list.
Yeah. If I was the 49ers, I would think linebacker would be where I feel the biggest need. Now, obviously, Greenlaw could be coming back, but you don't know when, and you don't know how healthy he's going to be. I just think that's where the drop off. I feel the drop off at maybe two spots, linebacker and defensive tackle. Although, you know, Malik Collins is actually playing very well, but you don't feel the defensive line. You know, you don't have Armstead in there. Maybe those two. Barros, would you agree with those two positions?
I would put defensive end at the top. Mm-hmm.
You always say defensive end.
I always say defensive end, and I'm always right on this.
Yes, because it's not the way they think. It's the way they think.
Yeah, you know, nobody does double team stats anymore. I want to see how much Nick Bosa is being chipped and double teamed and things like that compared to other top defensive ends. I think it's high. I just don't know if they're getting a lot of heat from the opposite side. I do think, you know, I remember watching the Vikings game and then the Rams game and thinking, wow, this Leonard Floyd has just gone over a cliff. He just did not show up in either of those games. Looking back though, I think he must've been hurt, or maybe he was dealing with the knee issue coming out of the preseason. That obviously is affecting Yetur Gross-Matos. Remember that they got hurt on back-to-back plays, very similar knee injuries. And then Gross-Matos had to have surgery on Friday. He's out for, you know, at least a month and a half. And I wonder whether Leonard Floyd, who, you know, always plays through a lot of injuries, was affected, because he's been better these past 2 weeks. But even if that's true, even if he's back to being the Leonard Floyd he's been in recent years, who's behind him? There's no Yetur Gross-Matos for maybe 2 months. Sam Okwuonu didn't really do much yesterday. I mean, he had been good. He played a fair amount of snaps and really didn't show up like he had the previous two. Robert Beal, he's giving you nothing on defense, nothing. He didn't show up on the stat sheet again in this game. So I think there's a real depth issue at the very least at defensive end. I don't know who's out there, who's available, but if that's, you know, if I'm shopping for guys, that's probably at the top of my list.
Yeah, you always say that, and they always do it, and they may trade for two of them last season. I don't know who you're going to get who's going to be very good. Now, you know, they're probably better than Beal, probably better than, you know, some of the other backups, but they're expensive, right? Chase Thomas was not cheap on the trade market last season. And I don't know that you for sure know what you're getting out of them. Maybe a Kocerek guy, you know, there's always those guys out there. But so you get lucky and you get a Cleland Furl, you know, what does that really get you? You know, I mean, it's better, but how much better? I think linebacker they're just hurting so bad at linebacker. They're getting beat at linebacker. Devondre Campbell is a veteran guy, but he just cannot make the plays that they're used to from linebacker. Whether there's a guy out there who can do that, I'm probably wrong on that too. But could they have gotten Ernest Jones, right? Didn't the Rams trade him in the preseason? He's like a real player. Who knows what's available? I don't know. What would you give up, a second-round pick?
Oh, a second? No, I don't know. I mean, you got to tell me who we're getting for a second.
I mean, a Chase Young level player, that's what it costs, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I would. You know, it's going to depend on where they are and where other teams are at the end of October, obviously. That's
what the Jets keep losing, get one of their defensive ends.
Yeah, something like that. You know, there are a lot of teams that play this defense now. So, you know, that would be a factor as well. I'm trying to think of who the Panthers, some other teams. Yeah, they don't.
What would you give up? Not the Raiders aren't trading him. They're especially not trading him to the 49ers. But what would you give up for Max Crosby?
I'd give up a first round pick for Max Crosby.
Oh, yeah, but it's probably gonna take more than that.
Yeah,
I'd give up a first and a third.
Yeah, imagine having those bookends on your team. I mean, the kid on the Lions, Hutchinson, he's fantastic.
Well, they're not getting him.
They're not getting him. But I'm just saying that imagine this defense with two Boses on it. Well, maybe that's the answer.
I know they're not getting him either.
one other question I had for you. Did you go back and watch the broadcast to see how Tom Brady did?
I did not. I heard he was like joking about the last pick in the draft beating him right off the bat. I heard that, but I did not go back. How was Brady?
Well, you know, I don't know if this is Brady or Brady and Burkhardt, but there was a lot of like, whoa, hey!
Yeah, we heard that. We're on the Kyler Murray. We went back and listened to that on the replay. It was just Brady screaming.
It's just two guys making guttural noises all game.
Wait a minute. No. Were you listening to Tim Ryan or were you listening to Tom Brady?
And I realized that that's sort of like what the color commentator does these days. That's Tony Romo. Mark Sanchez does a lot of that. But I don't think you can have two guys doing it. I mean, somebody has to be the straight man in the booth. And it was like listening to two drunk guys at a bar. I did not enjoy it. It was, I mean, if Tom Brady's in the booth, I want to hear what Tom Brady's thinking and sort of the more erudite things, not just the everyman stuff, really impressed with the play, that sort of thing. Big play happening. We're going to signal to you it's a big play by making loud noises. It just seemed odd.
Kevin Burkhardt, the old John Lynch partner. They're buddies. So
yeah, but I don't remember the Lynch Burkhardt duo being like Party Central like yesterday's was.
Interesting. Now I want to listen to this. I do remember we called up the Murray play while we're in the press box, and it's just Brady yelling. Oh my God!
Exactly. Right. It's just two dudes yelling the whole time.
It's like a SEC foot radio call. It's just guys yelling.
Maybe that's what people want these days. Maybe you and I should just start yelling in these podcasts.
I yell at Mayoko throughout the game, but you know that.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying.
It is really, really Mayoko-esque. All right. Anything else you got here? Thursday night game.
Yeah, you got three good wide receivers and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jackson Smith-Njigba. And, you know, that's going to test the 49ers. I thought that they were starting to put Renardo Green in for Isaac Yiadom against the Patriots. I don't know whether that was Patriots specific, like, all right, this is a good game to get the rookies some snaps. Or whether Yiadom was dealing with that thigh injury. He was on the injury report during the week or what. But it doesn't seem like they would do that in this game coming up.
On the road, three good receivers.
Right. But if it is Yiadom, then, I mean, it's an easy call for the Seahawks. I mean, which of these three receivers are you going to throw to? Okay, the guy that number 22 is lined up across. So I think that'll be interesting to watch. It'll be interesting to watch whether Charvarius Ward mirrors DK Metcalf like he did last year. He had the game of the year for him last year in Seattle. That was a terrific game. Storylines galore for this game coming up.
Defense is going to need to turn in a really good game. And Brock Purdy's going to need to throw for some touchdowns and no interceptions. That's Shanahan always says it. He really said it yesterday. Turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. You can't win when you're turning it over like that. Kittle says it all the time. It's true. Now, listen, you can't just not turn over. You can't go into a game. We shall not turn over. You got to try to make plays. That's when turnovers happen. But they cannot do that. On the road, that crowd, at night, can't turn it over, and they're going to they need to score three touchdowns. Like, they just have to, and they haven't been doing that consistently this season, and they need to not have Seattle go up and down the field. Those are two important things. You might sense where I'm leaning on this one. I think it's going to be a really tough game. I think they can win it. We've seen them win the games when they have to in the Shanahan era when things are tough. But this one's this one is not going to be easy. And I see it as like, and it might come down to a field goal, Barros. It might come down to a new guy trying to kick a field goal in the weather,
with the game on the line, whew, we've seen Chase McLaughlin on the other do that for the 49ers against the Seahawks a few years ago when he was subbing in for Robbie Gould and did not
work out so well. McLaughlin kick. I'm looking up the weather for Seattle on Thursday. 61, partly cloudy. Nothing.
Okay, no precipitation.
Nothing dramatic. No, it'll be colder at kickoff, but yeah. Okay. That'll be a break.
Well, it won't be 91 degrees or what or whatever it was yesterday at Levi's. I felt terrible for the crowd. Oh my God,
We should point that out. Both you and I were expecting a very sparse crowd, and it may not have been as full as it was for the Patriots, but I was impressed that people showed up and stayed.
I mean, yeah. Listen, the third quarter, it's rough because they're in the suites and everything, but man, they came back out and they stayed through it. And maybe they're just getting used to dealing with the sun. I don't know. It is rough out. I know how rough it is under the sun at Levi's. So credit to them. I think the 49ers might be wearing their white uniforms all the way through September next year and into October. They didn't plan
They're wearing them on Thursday. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that really won't matter, but all good. And pretty large game on Thursday. Pretty large games. Got Thursday. They'll have a little mini break, but then the Chiefs are on a bye, so they don't have an rest advantage over the Chiefs. Chiefs at Levi's and the Cowboys at Levi's. Got to go 2-1, right? They got to go 2-1 in these three games. 1-2 is certainly possible, and then they're going to be in some trouble the rest of the way. All right, Barros.
That's it for me.
That's it for Barros. That's it for the show. See you guys.